Welcome to our Saturday simulcast. We have the whole band together. It's been a while since we've all done this together. We've kind of done separate segments from time to time, but it's good to have Brian and Tom with me. And I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, the 811 Bistro, and the Boiler Up Bar. Well, they've busy with all the graduation last week, and then of course senior week. It's still hopping a little bit on campus. It slowed down a little bit of late, but not at the Union Club Hotel. They're always going at it hard. So all right, guys, we are who knows, by the time this the listen to this, it may have already been decided or whatever. But I'll start with you, Brian, on Zach Edey. Obviously, we've kind of, I don't know if we've beaten the story to death, but it's, there's been a lot of speculation, but of what's going on. But just your thoughts on, you wrote this week about where Purdue might be with without him. I think there's a general feeling that he's coming back, but what say you on that situation at this point?
Well, I don't think you can ever beat a story to death when it's the best player in college basketball. Yeah. You know, you know, maybe or maybe not coming back to your team. It's a very different time, obviously. You know, 5 years ago, there's no way a player like Zach Edey, who is has reached the pinnacle individually of his sport, would ever, you know, probably come back to college. Now, with athletes having the ability to earn off their accomplishments and such, it's a very different time, and it's changing college basketball. It's making college basketball older, and this might be Purdue's opportunity to benefit here. This isn't just a money decision, but money is always going to be, you know, first and foremost among these things. The point of the NBA process is to give them a chance to make your decision for you by telling you, look, we love you, we're taking you, you're going to be a first round pick. That's going to come with a 3-year guaranteed contract. That's going to, if you come out now, that gets you to your next contract a year earlier than going back to college. That gets you in the retirement program a year earlier. It's just, there's just so many reasons to go if you're secure in your position. I just think that Edey, though, you know, as we've talked about ad nauseum, if this is 1985, you know, he's the number one pick in the draft. If this is 1995, you know, he's a top 10 pick. If this is 2005, you know, he might be a, he might be a first round pick, but this is 2023, and the game at all levels has changed. Players like him are you know, have been sort of relegated to the background for a variety of reasons. I just don't know if he's going to get enough certainty from the NBA people that it would make sense for him to go now. That doesn't mean he can't play in the NBA. If you're good enough, they're going to find a place for you. That's one of the things people overlook in all of this analysis, is they come in all shapes and sizes in the NBA. You can watch these playoff games tonight and see guys who, you know, Bruce Brown is like a 6'4", 5 position power forward type. And I don't think anybody would have looked at him coming out of Miami as like, okay, this guy's the prototype. This guy is modern basketball, you know, stuff like that. So they do come in all shapes and sizes. I do think, you know, somebody would have to be really committed to developing a player like him. And as I said in what I wrote today, it's the NBA people should not look at him for his age, and they shouldn't dock him if he comes back a year. They should look at him at the stage of his development. He's been playing basketball like 6 years, 6-7 years, whatever it is. So he might be a 21-year-old right now, but he might as well be like an 18-year-old from a basketball experience perspective. I just think that it just makes so much sense for him to come back. It will make so much sense for him to come back, but we don't know what he's going to hear from the NBA, and it is premature. You know, I don't know what he's going to do. My suspicion from day one has been that he would come back. That's been my prediction, but I don't know. He doesn't know. It's up to the NBA. If they just tell him, hey, we absolutely love you, we think you're a top 20 pick, a top 30 pick at least, or somebody who's absolutely going to get a guaranteed contract, he should go. If not, he should come back. I do think that this isn't just a case where NIL opportunities in college could compare to what he'd make in the NBA or in the G League, overseas, whatever path he would have to take. I think they could even exceed it on a per year basis. Now you start getting into stuff like benefits and, you know, the retirement program and quality of life and developmental opportunities and what gives you the best chance to stick in the league. But you're kind of getting pretty far down the road with some of that stuff. The short-term issue is, what do you want to do? What would be the most enjoyable for you? What would help your basketball development the most? And how much money would you make? And I just think when you look at those three things, you know, the option to come back to Purdue stacks up pretty well. And this isn't a case where, you know, I think we all kind of come to a point where we're sort of done with school and we just, you know, we just don't want any part of it anymore. But I do think he generally likes his teammates. I think he likes his team. I think he's pissed off from the way the season ended. And I know that makes for a cute story and something people say sometimes when at the end of the day, this is business. But I do generally think part of him, you know, would be motivated to come back to Purdue to try to set some things right in that regard. Yeah, so I don't know what he's going to do, but that's been my guess for quite some time that he would come back. But we will see. I don't anticipate a decision anytime in the next couple of days. I think he'll kind of take his time with this, as he should. That's the whole point.
Yeah, there may be some other information to have. I know that Matt Painter on Field of 68 on Thursday didn't, you know, Jeff Goodman came out and said, well, I think, you know, he's leaning towards coming back. Matt didn't say anything in particular because, again, well,
I think everyone's guessing. I don't think anybody can put, it's up to the NBA. It's up to the people who, again, the whole point of the process to give them as much time as possible to make your decision for you.
Right.
And that has not happened yet. And that won't happen for some time. I think people are just looking at everything I just said and saying, well, I think he probably comes back because everything I just said is valid and makes sense. And as opposed to most of the things that came out of my mouth, which don't make any sense. I think I just kind of laid things out pretty succinctly for what this is all going to come down to and how much sense Purdue actually would make. I mean, you see this fundamentally changing college basketball. Without NIL, Trace Jackson Davis is gone last year. Hunter Dickinson's gone, not just last year, but this year. You know, Kofi Coburn probably would have left Illinois. This is Purdue's chance to maybe benefit from, you know, this new world order in college basketball.
Excuse me, Tom, when you look at the Purdue in football, Hudson Card, there was, don't know exactly what the NIL was a part of his, as we understand it, his process of choosing Purdue. Football, a very different animal. And what's your sense, even as much as you talk to not only recruiting, but just watching the portal where Purdue is and how, you know, there's a lot of challenges to go with this for in football when you got to deal with 25 or so scholarship guys a year, plus or minus the transfer portal guys. It's a very different situation in football than it is in basketball, it appears.
I mean, I think everybody wants money, Alan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Football player, basketball player.
No question.
I think everybody wants money. There's obviously more football players and the dynamic's different, but yeah, you know, we've seen Purdue players, football players, you know, be involved with some work with the Boilermaker Alliance here in the off season. Actually, beginning in December, they had an autograph session at the Tippecanoe Mall. Several players did, and again, we've seen some others involved here sporadically throughout the winter and spring. So, I think it's all still a work in progress. You know, we all know Ryan Walters is full steam ahead with this. I think he understands, you know, he's a young coach, 37 years old. He knows the importance of having a good collective, having a good NIL program. And again, he's willing to embrace it and help make it happen for Purdue because he understands the need to have a good NIL setup if you want to cultivate a good roster. So, and Purdue's still, you know, despite maybe having one of the more not having a real robust collective at this point, you know, has brought in, you know, like 16 or 17 transfers right now. The scholarship count's getting pretty close to ceiling by my estimations, according to the chart I keep on the website, pinned to the message board. I've got Purdue at 82 scholarships right now. And we saw some attrition this week with Jacob Wahlberg going in the portal, obviously, and Brady Allen as well. So, yeah, there are still some positional needs for the Boilermakers. I think they're going to look to the portal. In my estimation, I think that they could still use an offensive tackle.
Breaking news, Purdue needs an offensive tackle.
I think, you know, we could see some more help at cornerback coming possibly. That's another spot that's really been overhauled this offseason, guys. The offensive line and the secondary have been the two biggest areas where Purdue's really hit the portal the most. So, again, offensive tackle, cornerback, if they could find a linebacker who plays inside linebacker, I'm sure they could take him. That may be an issue at this point as well. So those are probably the biggest areas, the two positions, I think, or three positions that could still use some augmentation for Purdue. And just remember this, it's still a long way from May 18th or whatever this is, May 19th, May 20th until September 2nd when the Boilermakers kick off. So a lot of things can happen over the course of the summer. You guys have watched Purdue football for a long time, and you guys have seen this roster change and add players during the course of the summer that have turned out to be impactful guys.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Tom, but it's just kind of funny that, like, every year since like 2005, ever since the grad transfer came along, Purdue needs an offensive tackle off the transfer
market.
Every year. That's not just something that reflects on Purdue's offensive line recruiting and development, but it's also just the importance of the offensive tackle position in football, period.
Yeah.
Purdue's lost three linemen that probably would have started this year from the pool. Right. It started with Spencer Holstedge way back in December. Of course, he's a guard. They lost another guard,
Simon
Finau. Then, of course, the Eric Miller transfer after spring football. Of course, he was a tackle. So right now you're looking at Mohamed Musa as being a tackle that's going to start for you, right? Then after that, I think it gets a little dicey. Daniel Johnson could be a projected starter. He's coming off a knee injury. Maybe one of these transfers. I think Ben Farrell, the Indiana Wesleyan kid, could get a look at tackle as well. You know, Marcus Bowe, if need be, could swing out and play tackle. But I think the feeling is he's better on the interior. So I tell you what, that offensive tackle spot in my mind just leaves I just think there's some questions that need to be answered there. I think the interior is strong, but again, the edge is there on that Purdue offensive line. Bear watching here moving forward.
Yeah. How in the heck they're going to, I mean, you really are not going to be able to tell the players without a program even more this year than that's ever been the case at just about everywhere. I mean, it's how the heck? Go ahead, Tom.
And then here too, remember they had the junior college offensive tackle committed, the Isaiah Walker kid, about 3 weeks ago. He put out that he's not going to come to Purdue. So that was a guy they were counting on to play offensive tackle as well. So you could kind of throw him into the players lost column if you wanted to for Purdue as well at tackle.
Yeah. You're going to have some really quick guys. You're going to need to be quick studies, but also with the ability to get that camaraderie or whatever it's going to take to have a cohesive unit is going to be fascinating to see, not just at Purdue. There's a lot of other places that are somewhere between Purdue and Colorado and everybody else. There's going to be a lot of shaking going on to be able to fix some of that stuff.
I think we are due for this. Is completely off the topic, but that's what I'm here for. is completely taking these things off the rails. I think we are on the verge of an all-time golden era for wars between football programs and their admissions departments. Because this can't be a simple deal. You know, this can't be you just saw what happened with Caleb Love at Michigan.
Yeah, how does that happen?
He just didn't have enough credits to get into Michigan. Same thing happened last year, I think, with Terrence Shannon.
Yeah.
A lot of these schools, a lot of these good academic schools or serious academic schools, I should say, both are going to have to, you know, figure some things out in terms of their admissions processes, because it can't be easy. Stanford, you have no chance if you can't get transfers in school.
Northwestern,
Notre Dame. Yeah. Michigan has shown us in basketball 2 years in a row now that it's not just picking apples off trees here, guys. Right. It's, you know, these, and that should be a cautionary tale too for some of these athletes kind of coming into college. You know, get your schoolwork done, because if you want to exercise this flexibility you now have in your career, mm-hmm. you never know what's going to happen. You never know how many credits you're going to need. You never know what sort of progress toward a degree quotient you're going to need. It's just going to be a very complicated time for getting kids in school.
Yeah,
sorry, that was completely
no. We need a little point. Hijacking, but the Caleb Love deals. It's amazing to me. Is he still
like, whoever would have thought Michigan couldn't get an athlete into school? Yeah. You know, whoever would have thought Michigan couldn't get a basketball player into a school that it really wanted?
Especially from a good academic school like North Carolina. I mean,
provided he had credits. I mean,
that's right. And that, I understand North Carolina's had its issues academically. I get it. But my whole thing is, how do you have a one week window where the guy commits and then he finds out he can't get in? That's
why wouldn't Caleb Love or somebody have figured out before he goes public, hey, can this guy get in school? Well, why
that, would that? That's my question.
Well, there's probably a process involved for admissions in terms of going through everything and certifying the classes and all of that stuff. And
well, now Caleb Love's on the market.
Not like the good old days when Nojel Eastern could just announce he was committed to Michigan before he even talked to Michigan or whatever it might be. But I suppose that's what Caleb Love did. He announced his commitment before he was admitted.
Yeah,
but, I don't think that's anything all that out of the ordinary is. If Michigan offers you a scholarship, you know, there's an unspoken, right? I mean,
it's contingent. You got to be able to get in.
But that contingency is always the fine print. It's
just embarrassing.
Well, it's the same deal when you get kids, get kids to commit. They still have to get into school, and that's not usually a big deal. But that part of it is.
When's the last time a recruit didn't get into school because of academics?
Well, you don't hear about them a lot of times.
It gets laundered nowadays. It becomes a decommitment. It becomes the kid just doesn't show up. I mean, and you know, we have in football nowadays, there's so little transparency going on that a kid just doesn't show up.
Whoop.
He's just not here. Okay.
Darndest thing. He just never.
Yeah. Well, and I think sometimes too, there's definitely a difference between a kid coming in as a freshman and a kid, I don't know how many years had Love been in college. It's 2, 3, and
4, right?
4. Well, this would be his fourth year. So that situation where, you know, you got to have progress and all that stuff, and it is a challenge, I guess, but still, you're right. It's a very strange situation for Michigan, and I'm sure it'll happen. You know,
too bad for Michigan.
But you have guys that don't get in for one reason or another, and and that one's certainly a high profile one. I wanted to switch topics to stadium renovation, and of course, Tom talked to Mike Vinsky this week. It appears Purdue is on schedule, that's a good thing. But boy, you go look at that thing; it's a daunting task. To think you got to dig a tunnel, and there's still a lot of work. I understand it's only May the 20th. Portal. There's a portal coming.
It's a portal.
It's a big portal.
It's not a tunnel. It's a portal.
But your inclination from where Mike Kaminsky sits is that it's all going to get done come hell or high water.
Yeah, we could call it the Dwayne Purvis portal. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, he told me all systems go, everything's on schedule, guys. The $45 million renovation, you know, shovels went in the ground the moment Purdue's home season concluded last fall. And you guys have driven by it. I know I have. And you see the cranes and the whirl of activity. I think the tunnel's built already, or at least bored, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, they're not sure if the interior of the tunnel, the graphics, I think they really want a nice, cool graphic element to the interior of that tunnel. It's going to maybe have moving images and lights. It's going to be, I think they want to, and I think they have some serious ambitions. Whether they can afford all that is to be determined, but I think they have a cool vision for what the inside of that tunnel could look like. But again, that may not be ready. no big deal there, right? We knew the nutrition and dining facility and the Northeast parking part of the parking lot is not going to be ready to be used, you know, this fall. That was always a known. At this point, Babinski said on, I think, July of 2024, they expect that facility to be functional. Again, the structure may be done this fall, but I guess there's a long lead time to obtain the equipment and some of the necessary other gadgets to really fill out that facility that's going to cause for the delay in the opening there. So then there's the south end zone, probably the most elaborate of all, right? And all systems go, guys. And I know that I guess there was some talk where, you know, are there any contingency plans if this thing isn't done by September 2nd for the Fresno State game?
Curtains.
Mike Babinski told me that, you know, if for some reason this thing isn't done, they would just play in a compromised Ross-Ade Stadium for a game or two. Mm. You know, cordon off the south end zone, do whatever. I just think logistically, from what I hear, logistically, to move games to Indianapolis.
Oh, it'd be a nightmare.
Just be a nightmare. So, obviously, anytime you have an endeavor like this, you always have contingency plans, right? You have to. You never know what's going to happen in the world. But again, it looks like everything's on schedule. I'm sure the construction people, the companies, have some big incentives to meet monetarily if they hit them. They're their timelines. But again, it's going to be a pretty neat incarnation of Ross-Ade Stadium for all of us to see, guys. I'm really eager to see the south end zone in particular. And the fact that you're now going to be able to walk the entire, outer corridor of Ross-Ade Stadium is going to be sort of a neat addition as well.
Yeah, and they have, what, 5 of 6, what, 4 of their first 5 weekends are at home this year, right?
Home games, man. Yeah, you know what, you guys, this month, maybe next week, we should start hearing some of the start times and whatnot for these early season games. We've seen a couple trickle out for other teams.
Right.
That's something for everybody to keep on their radar. Again, we should get some start times and probably some networks for these early September Purdue football games this month.
Yeah, we know that the Friday, September 22nd, Purdue will play Wisconsin at home.
Yeah.
That's one of those home games, right? They've got Fresno. They've got Syracuse, Wisconsin, Illinois
is the last one.
Yeah, Illinois is homecoming on September 29th or September 30th, whatever that date is. Another September. Yeah, so you got a lot of interesting stuff going on, certainly with that. Brian, why Brian is moving, I think he's sorting his baseball cards while he's going on, but that's what he's still a great multitasker. Is that what you're, are you just dialing some stuff?
I'm just, I don't sit still very well right now.
Who's the one common guy you got in every pack of cards you opened up as a kid? Oh, I got another Clay Carroll. What the heck?
Don Sutton, maybe.
Don Sutton's a good one.
Hey, I shouldn't have.
Bill Naharadney. I got another Bill Naharadney. Dang.
A quick point to make about the stadium. It's a really big deal that thing is being named for Joe Tiller to the Purdue's football alums. I shouldn't have made fun of it being called the portal. And my urge to make fun of the word portal just kind of took over there.
but it's
amazing to me how these schools pull off these projects. And obviously these construction companies pull off these projects on deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, if I were an AD, if I were a university president, whatever, I would be horrified.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know what's going to happen. You just don't know what's going to happen with the weather. You just don't know what's going to happen with random objects flying out of the sky. You know, you just don't know what you're going to find when you start to dig. It is amazing to me that, you know, these schools are able to get these projects done in such short periods of time. Purdue obviously got no help in the schedule either with all those home games early in the season. But
But they did get help with a pretty dang mild winter around here. And I don't know how much that impacted the project.
Yeah.
That was a good thing. But
that is a good point.
I don't know how much it really impacted. And the other thing about the Tiller Tunnel, and you're right, it is a big deal to players of that era. Certainly, I know Kelly Kitchell and many, Drew Brees obviously had on Purdue's Day of Giving the last week of April. They had a matching fund. I don't know if either one of you guys know how much they raised, but
I asked, and Mike was not sure at this point.
But I do know they did do some good for that, and that's a very impassioned project for that group. The Chucky Akobis and the Brandon Gorans and the Drew Breeses, obviously, and many others. It is a big deal because there was a lot of talk, you know, about when not only was Joe leave this earth too early, but he also, you know, what were we going to do to really make a big deal? I know they named the street at the north end of the stadium, Joe Tiller Drive or Avenue or whatever it is. But I really am glad, just because I think it is a nod to your tradition, but also a very special time, and a lot of great, as all of us have had the opportunity to be around a lot of these guys over the years. Some really fabled names, not just Drew Brees. I mean, the Jason Lorenzels of the world, some unique characters, and they meant the world to the Purdue football program. That is for sure. So it will be interesting to see how they. I saw some of the graphics. I didn't know about the lights. It's going to be interesting to see what they put together there with that. Brian, well, I wanted to know, well, go ahead, Brian.
They want to make that a big recruiting thing too, I would imagine.
Yeah. They do.
Everything everybody does nowadays. And this is sort of, I don't want to say this is the James Franklin effect, because a lot of coaches think this way, is everything you do with your program has to have something to do with impacting recruiting.
Yeah.
Because it's just so important. They're the reason, you know, Penn State has an awesome football program, an awesome facility, awesome facilities, but probably the worst press box in the Big Ten. At least the last time I was there was
going to change, though, right? They're going to
every dollar they spend on football, Franklin has wanted dedicated to recruiting, that's sort of the name of the game nowadays. To answer Tom's other question, I just put some more thought into it. Tony Armas.
Hey, I love
the afro, the big mustache.
I love
an all-time great. An all-time great facial hair team with the mid-1980s Boston Red Sox. You had your Dwight Evans, your Jim Rice, your Wade Boggs, I think Dennis Eckersley might have been there earlier in the 80s. You had some great mustaches on that team.
Oh, yeah, Eckersley was
Tony
there
Armas before. Was very much one of them.
Eckersley got traded to the Cubs in 84.
Once again, completely car-bombed our podcast.
That's part of the game, my friend.
Back to recruiting, though.
George Foster, sideburns. He was on the Red Sox.
Yeah, but not much facial hair. But yeah, he was. Go ahead.
I don't know. They had Cecil Cooper for a while.
Oh yeah.
And Eckersley was there until he got traded to the Cubs in '84, right? So
I was like George. I like George Scott. Wore the hard helmet at first base. But yeah. Hey, Brian. Now the real smart coaches don't spend money on facilities; they spend it on their NIL.
Well,
and you know what, hey, Brian, you can
sort have, of the great conflict going
you
on
can
right
have,
now.
You can have your flashy tunnel. The players want cash.
Correct. Where things are fundamentally going to change now is as I think Ryan Walters said on the radio a few weeks ago, talk to your boosters about helping the collective, not, you know, building us facilities anymore.
I think your money's better spent in the collective than putting it in
a fancy
barber shop or water fountain or – I mean, these college facilities are better than the NFL facilities. Why? The NFL facilities got payrolls to meet.
And that's where, you know, some of the hypocrisy really lied in the past couple of generations, where people who just didn't want the players having money, you know, would say, oh, we build them all these nice facilities to help develop them as players and to make their lives more comfortable, when in reality, all those facilities were there to recruit the next guys, not to develop the current guys.
You don't need a gigantic weight room. You don't need all these hot and cold. You need a minimal amount of stuff. It's like a car. You don't need the $70,000 Lincoln Navigator. You can take the Honda Accord to Payless just as well.
I think it's going to slow down.
The excess is too much, just too much.
Yeah.
I think some of this stuff from an efficiency perspective makes some sense, but that doesn't mean there have to be all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, you don't need all that, no.
Well, they've got them now, and I think it will slow it down. However, you know, one thing that's interesting, maybe an apples and oranges comparison, but you look at these NBA, and I've been in a couple of these NBA training facilities. I understand you're only talking about 12 players, but the money they put into those things are, I mean, again, 12 versus a full roster, but it's it is crazy what they do, and they do it to
attract you know, in the NBA, you're also still trying to attract free agents. You're trying to retain your free agents.
That's my point.
You also have corporate sponsorships who are underwriting a lot of that stuff, have naming rights on some of those things.
It's kind of the same,
but it's also kind of different.
Yeah, there's some similarities, but I think you're right. I think it will slow down, but I do think that the great conundrum, it also will be a question that we'll have 5 years from now, depending on what happens with NIL too, is if it does switch all over, because one thing that John Perdue Club and other things do is fund scholarships, and they spend a ton of money doing that. And it will be interesting to see. I'm not predicting that it's all going to transfer over to Boilermaker Alliance's of the world, but it is going to be interesting to see how that world changes, if it does.
Bottom line is, if you don't fund these teams, you're not going to be any good.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want. It's that simple.
Yeah. And you have to have, and again, what I have said about this whole thing all along is it's going to be interesting to see just where this is in 5 years, or where does this all shake out to a level that there are some guardrails and other things that make it navigable for coaches and teams and players, et cetera. But we're not there yet.
I've gone off on this tangent many times over the last few months, but I don't see where guardrails come from. Yeah. Like, the NCAA can't do anything. The NCAA can't say no to anyone. They can't enforce any of this stuff. I don't even think they're going to try to enforce this stuff. What's going on in my ear? They need the federal government to step in.
No,
what lawmaker is going to take on this problem? Aside from, if there's somebody whose state school might be affected, that might be winning politics in their state, fine. But is there any more un-American cause than trying to hold back the earnings of somebody in a free market country? It's just...
Right, unless you get...
This is capitalism at its finest, folks. I mean, this is...
Unless you get into collective bargaining and changes, and that will change...
Well, that you would have to term them as employees, and then you open up a whole other can of worms about benefits and...
I think that's coming. And
all sorts of other stuff.
Quit dancing around all this, giving money people these bizarre ways to these collectives and just make them employees.
Well, this very easily could have been the best thing that ever happened to the NCAA. But they just fought it and didn't embrace what was clearly coming. And this could have been expense offloaded for them. This could have solved all their revenue sharing problems had they just embraced it and come up with this on their own with some guardrails in place. The fact that it got to state lawmakers and federal lawmakers
it got to the Supreme Court.
It got to the Supreme Court. Yeah.
That's where the game was won and lost. Is that it can't? You're right. You're right. They can't go back because there's nothing to restrict. There's nothing right now that allows them to restrict any level of trade, so to speak, or their ability to make money. And this very easily
could have all changed for the better with like Jeremy Bloom. Remember the skier from Colorado who's on the football team who couldn't earn money from his skiing because he was an NCAA football player. If the NCAA had just come out then and said, okay, student athletes can make money off their name, image, and likeness up to a point, but you cannot recruit with it. And this was at a point in time when, like, you could have actually enforced your rules before you lost 1,000 times in court and had all of your power taken away basically. Had they just done that, you never would have run into all of this, all the O'Bannon stuff, most likely. And you just could have gotten ahead of this. You could have been a healthier game. You could have actually looked like the good guy for once instead of the incompetent bad guy, which has basically been the NCAA's identity for the longest time to a lot of people who are not involved in the NCAA. And it's just, it's everything that's happening, you know, could have been sidestepped. Not complete, the chaos of today competitively wouldn't be completely averted, because you would have given something on the front end, and something inevitably becomes more, and you would have reached a point where, you know, the restrictions probably would have had to be lifted. But I do think that had you just had some foresight in the 90s, in the early 2000s, whatever it might be, or the self-awareness enough to know that your model was not sustainable long term, this could have been very different.
Mr. Dean, are you anything else you want to add to that? Or in summation, it's, you're right. It is the way it is, and we do. It's been trying to solve it, and there may not be any real. We just, time will solve it over time. Something will evolve. But
I just can't believe this has gotten to the point. We were talking about this at lunch. I just can't believe this has gotten to the point where boosters are organizing above board, raising money to give to the athletes. Like, this was like Jerry Tarkanian's greatest dream. This was like Dale Brown's greatest dream. I don't know if Dale Brown's still alive or not, so I apologize to him if I'm slandering his good name. But
is he still alive?
He's still alive.
Yeah.
No, I hope he's not watching.
Jerry Tarkanian is not, though, right? So we know.
True story. True story about Jerry Tarkanian. Okay. It's in the 90s. I have no idea what year. Kenny Lowe is playing in an all-star game at Benton Central, okay, in the middle of a cornfield. Of all places, they have this all-star game, this like Illinois versus Indiana all-star game at Benton Central, of all places. And there's a player named Leon Smith back in the day from Chicago who reminded me very much of Raymond from White Men Can't Jump.
Yeah.
I'm going to get my other gun. No, this ain't Raymond. Anyway, so Leon Smith's playing in this game. Fresno State's recruiting him at the time. I'm sitting in the crowd at Fresno State. Who comes and sits next to me? Jerry Tarkanian. I couldn't believe it. I'm this like 22-year-old kid sitting there. And of course, right as soon as the game ended, Jerry Tarkanian walks down into the locker room following the players, which I don't know if that was legal or not at that point in the calendar. And 2 days later, Leon Smith commits to Fresno State. And I don't know if he ever played a game, because he had some well-documented issues.
Jerry Tarkanian
is not what he came to get.
Yeah, Dale Brown, 88 years old. Gene Cady will turn 87 on Sunday, by the way. So happy birthday to Gene, and it's a happy one for him, because he's going into the Hall of Fame, and that's a good thing. All right, we're going to stick a fork in this thing and say good day to all of you. Thank you all for watching and listening, and we appreciate that very much. We want to make sure you still deals going on to subscribe to goldenblack.com. You can also like us on YouTube. You can become join us on YouTube as well, and we appreciate all the people that do that.
I believe the preferred nomenclature is smash that like button.
Smash
that's what that I hear like every button. Other podcaster say. You smash it.
We could use that too. And if we were, if I was a little bit more hip, I'd be ready.
I need a new computer.
Yeah. 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 All right, guys. I want to thank the Union Club Hotel, also 811 Bistro, Boiler Up Bar, and we appreciate them. We'll be back. It's the summer, so we'll be doing these periodically. There'll be a lot of in June, football camps coming in. Brian will be back out on the road in July with basketball and doing some of them in June too with the Indiana All-Star basketball too. So a lot to look forward to on goldenblack.com. Thank you all for watching, and have a great rest of your weekend.